Hey, everybody. CKCB is on this upcoming Valentine's Day multi-true crime podcast collaboration. So check out this spot and look for the episode when it comes out around Valentine's Day.
Hey, listeners. I'm Christy.
And I'm Melissa.
We're the hosts of the chilling podcast, Buried Motives.
And guess what, folks? We've got something special for you this Valentine's Day.
That's right. We've teamed up with some of our incredible podcast friends for a one-of-a-kind collaboration.
Introducing the Broken Hearts Collaboration.
Every true crime enthusiast knows that love can sometimes take a turn, leading to unimaginable consequences.
This Valentine's Day, join us as we explore cases where love went horribly wrong. It's a twisted journey through the darker side of relationships.
You've heard of the seven-year itch, right? That crucial time when tensions escalate and couples are put to the ultimate test.
Well, in this collaboration, we've got something special for you. Each podcast will share a case representing 1 year out of the infamous seven-year itch.
We've delved into the depths of true crime to bring you stories that will send shivers down your spine.
So buckle up, listeners. Get ready for an unforgettable ride through the world of broken hearts.
We hope you enjoy this special collaboration as much as we loved putting it together.
Subscribe now to Buried Motives and our amazing friends podcast. Don't miss the Broken Hearts collaboration coming this Valentine's Day.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Crimes, Killers, Cults.
And beer.
And beer. True crime from the point of view of two crazy Florida men.
Crazy.
I'm crazy Florida man, Bill.
And crazier, crazy guy, Paul.
you definitely are crazy getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning to go run 5 miles at your age.
Not quite yet. I'm working it.
I think you may have me beat there in the crazy department because just the thought of that makes me want to puke.
It's good to get up, you know, kind of see what's going on before the sun comes up, you know, chase the coyotes off the streets and the rabbits and stuff like that. Make room for the next day.
make room for you. Make it so that you don't when you pass out from exhaustion, or if your knee goes out on you or something like that, you don't fall and land in coyote shit.
Yeah. I haven't seen any yet, but I've seen coyotes. I tell you, they're when the temperature drops, they start coming out. Man.
Oh, they are extremely smart.
Yeah,
I saw one time, cross the turnpike, and the thing actually sat there on the side of the road waiting for a break in traffic, crossed the southbound lane, right. Jumped over the little barrier, did the same thing, waited until there was a gap and ran across the street, you know, the other thing.
Wow.
It's like a lot of animals, they'll just like, oh, let's just run right across the street and bam, you know,
yep.
Especially iguanas.
Yeah. Squirrels, possums, iguanas,
raccoons. Raccoons, yeah. Definitely. Deer.
Armadillo.
Armadillo. Pretty much anything except for a coyote.
Yeah.
But that impressed me when I saw that. I was just like, holy crap. That thing knows to look both ways before crossing the street.
You've probably been in the wild for so long, gotten used to automobiles. They started, you know, having safety meetings. You know, with the pack and going, hey, We need to pay attention to this, and we need to start getting our shit together and help protect the rest of the pack. It's all about safety.
Yeah, safety first. So, anyway, all right, we're here for BTK Part 3, the finale.
Oh, yeah.
The finale of the reboot. So, but a quick aside before we get started with Part 3. You know, there was something I accidentally left out of Part 2. When news of Maureen Hedges' murder broke, Dennis's daughter Carrie was scared because it was very close to their home. And Dennis, being the great dad that he was, he comforted her and reassured her that everything would be all right. He said, "Don't worry about a thing, because every little thing is going to be all right."
Don't worry, be happy.
He might have.
Yeah.
I mean, I could see Dennis being a Bob Marley fan. Yeah. Or maybe not. Maybe not.
Yeah.
No, he wasn't cool enough to be a Bob Marley fan.
Yeah, he wasn't a Rasta man. Jocko Chachi man.
No, I picture him as the type that would like listen to Devo. Not that there's anything wrong with Devo, because there's not.
No.
But I can picture him as just he'd listen to it like nonstop.
Or
yeah, because
Abba.
Of the bondage reference.
Yeah.
No, the bondage reference and whip it. Yeah. Whip it good.
Yeah. Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe that was his trademark too. Really? Although he never whipped anybody that we know of.
No.
But that is part of BDSM, which was, you know, that was his thing, kind of like the glass of water.
Yeah. What?
So as time went on, our old pal Dennis began getting into all the latest serial killers that were going down. Repeat, going down as in being arrested. One that particularly fascinated him was Leonard Lake. And Leonard and his pal Charles Ng, they like to torture women. And Dennis was reading about them, probably salivating, says, "I like to torture women too. I'm just like them." And, oh boy, we are off to a very good start here, because I forgot to do the intro, the second intro, because remember I promised to do the haiku in Part 2?
Yeah. Well, that's a lead-in. This is a segue.
Yeah, so I did do it. I did two of them, actually, but I meant to have the first one come in right after our intro, so we'll just go ahead and play it now.
Yeah. And now, a haiku, spelled HYKOO, by Dennis Rader, in 363 BTK Factor X format.
BTK, the greatest of all time, serial. Poetic Strangler, me, Dennis. I poem. I like poems big lot. Factor X. Fox rhymes sex. Sex and six rhyme fox, yes. Three haiku.
I told you I was going to do it.
Thank you, Dennis, for that input.
Yeah, and thank you, Matt from Murder Coaster, for providing the intro to that. That was him. So
awesome.
Oh, God. But seriously, what, you know, based on the crap that you've had to read, I mean, I don't think I'm that far off.
No. No,
especially because he really liked the fact that he was a poetic strangler. You know, that was one of the names that he picked for himself.
Yeah.
So, and with his obsession with threes, the 363, I could see him doing a haiku in 363 instead of 575.
Yeah.
And there's another one coming at toward the end of the episode.
Oh yeah.
But. So Leonard Lake and Charles Ng like to torture women, and Dennis, you know, I like to torture women too. I'm just like them. But they also killed kids, and Dennis decided that killing kids crossed the line after what he did to the Oteros. Now, keep in mind, this is after him saying that he wanted to do the same thing to Shirley Vian's kids. And if he wasn't such a tool, he would have came to that realization because of how bad he felt about wanting to do it to her kids as well. Leonard Lake was into paganism, and Dennis had his own monsters. You see, they're just alike. Yay.
Uh-huh.
But this proves that Dennis knows nothing about paganism. Lake liked to take pictures too, and Charles Ng was a kleptomaniac. It's like Dennis is like, I'm like both of them. Yeah. Lake killed himself, and Dennis considered it once, and they were like peas and carrots.
Peas and carrots, man.
Leonard Lake and Charles Ng are two that we're going to cover at some point. They were a duo.
Yeah.
But another one he started drooling over was scorecard killer Randy Kraft. And he was one of the most prolific serial killers that this country had ever seen. And one of the absolute most sadistic and disgusting as well. Dennis and Randy were both born in 1945. Mm-hmm. And Randy was also able to lead a double life, and nobody thought that he could possibly be a killer. He loved raping men. Oh, wait, maybe not that one. But other than the gay man part of it, Dennis and Randy were twin flames. Well, that and cutting off a man's balls while he's still alive and shoving them up his ass. Or cutting off a victim's eyelids while they're still alive and burning them with a car cigarette lighter.
Jeez.
In the eye.
Whoa.
Yeah, Randy Kraft was a sick fuck.
Damn. He had some rage in him. Man. That takes
a little
rage.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll get to him at some point, but he's definitely not one I'm looking forward to.
No. Yeah.
But they did have one thing in common, or there was one thing in common with these pukes that Dennis did not have. Take a guess.
They were in prison or dead, and Dennis wasn't.
Good. You read my mind. So, in late August of 1986, Dennis decided it was time to kill again. He was likely ready to up his clout after studying all of these serial killers that he was just like, and he wanted to do something crazy. He wanted to kill somebody on his lunch break. So, he fixated on Vicky Wegerle, a 28-year-old mother. And he had seen her while driving around, and he began stalking her. He stalked her for 3 weeks, and in order to do this at lunch, he would have to arrange to be working in that area. No problem. He decided to play a ruse as a telephone repairman, and he already had technician's clothes, so he took a Southwestern Bell logo off of a phone book and taped it to his hard hat.
Wow.
Yeah. He also made a fake Southwestern Bell ID badge. And he also had his kill kit, and I mean briefcase. And he drove his personal car there and parked it across the street from the house. And he walked up to the next door neighbor's house and knocked. And he asked him questions, making it seem like he was doing door-to-door telephone surveys. You know, as we know, phone lines are his trademark.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's trademark, man. I'm a phone man.
Darn right. You got to get all in it, man.
Yep. So he then went to the Wegerle's house. And one reason that he picked this house was because there was a low awning that made it really hard to see in the windows or even the front door from the street. So as he got close, he heard somebody playing the piano. And he didn't have a name for this project yet, so he named it Project Piano on the spot. And he laughed. myself thinking that organ music would have been more fitting considering what was about to happen. God, this guy. So Dennis got to the door and he knocked and Vicky answered. And he said that he was there to check her telephone line. So she let him in. There was a baby in the playpen. And Vicky showed him where the phone was, and he fiddled with it in some little contraption he rigged up, passing it off as a phone tester. Yep, my handy-dandy phone tester doodly-o thingy says that you have a dial tone, ma'am. Although he had already cut the phone line because that was his trademark.
Yeah.
But obviously he wasn't going to tell her that she didn't have a dial tone because that would make her upset. And he didn't want her upset.
Didn't want her
Not yet.
She didn't want to get
Not yet anyway.
Yeah.
So as soon as she turned her back, Dennis pulled his gun from his jacket and pointed it at Vicky. She was scared and she started to cry. She said her husband would be coming back home for lunch soon, but she was more concerned for the baby than she was for herself. And of course she was, because she was a good mother. He ordered her back to the bedroom and he said he was going to tie her up, and she was upset. That just kills me. She was upset.
Man.
He used one of her stockings to tie her up, but she broke away and began fighting. Once again, Dennis says she fought like a hellcat. That's the second time he's used that word. I guess that's his trademark too.
Yeah, hellcats.
She scratched the shit out of his nose and face, and he would have to cover it up until it healed. And it doesn't say what he used to cover it up, although he would have been just fine in 2020.
Oh, yeah. darn right.
He said in the book that he left DNA under her fingernails, but he didn't think about it at the time, but he did worry about it later. He worried about the DNA underneath her fingernails, but not about all that jizz that he left everywhere.
Yeah. Guess he wasn't good at priorities.
Thinking
everything out. Got to have contingencies, man.
I mean, it literally makes you. If anything was going to have DNA, it's that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it literally makes people.
I've got the book. It's like that thick of the FBI forensics manual. And one of the things they teach everybody in forensics is you leave a part of evidence behind everywhere you go. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
When, where, how, everywhere.
Yeah.
It's a matter of looking for it.
Yep. I mean, yeah, like if I, it could be something, you're walking down the grocery store, a piece of your hair falls out and lands on the floor.
Yep.
You know, I need some noodles. Oh, no, you know what? I don't need noodles. Let me put those back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do I have enough bottled water? Yeah, I think I got enough bottled water. I don't need the bottled water anymore. Yep, you just left DNA on it.
Yep. Everywhere.
So he finally overpowered her, and he strangled her, and he opened her clothes, and he took a few pictures. Dogs in the backyard were barking loudly, and he didn't know if she was serious about a husband coming home or not, but he got the hell out of there quickly. No water. Poor Dennis.
Ah. Yeah.
And actually, he hadn't cut the phone line. but he was dressed as a phone line worker, but he did take Vicky's purse and he left the baby alone in the playpen. And he wants you to know that he didn't touch the baby and the baby didn't see anything.
Mm.
So, good on you, Dennis.
So the baby didn't get upset.
Babies get upset like half of the day when they don't get, if they decide they want something, they'll coo. And if they don't get it in like a split second, then they're upset.
Yeah.
So Dennis took off, and he took the same route that Mr. Wegerle would be taking in. And it's very likely that they crossed paths when he was on his way home and Dennis was on his way out. And Dennis was feeling all sorts of power after this. Mr. Wegerle was named the prime suspect because he indeed did come home from lunch. He came into the house, found the baby crying. He called out for Vicky, and he searched the house, and he found her dead in the bedroom, and he immediately called the police. And he was never charged with the murder, but he did have the reputation of a wife killer for years until Dennis was captured. Mm. Ruined his life. Everybody thought that he had killed his wife.
Yeah.
And gotten away with it. Dennis said he felt great remorse for this murder. He thought it was weird that he felt remorse for the murder that took place in 1986, but he killed again in 1989. She's like, whoa, isn't that weird? Hmm. Isn't it weird that I would do that?
Yeah, 3 years apart.
Yeah. That's just all through this, it's just Dennis, Dennis is just like beating him, patting himself on the back. See, I'm such a good I'm a very complex man.
Yeah.
The only thing complex about him is how he hasn't managed to get caught yet at this point.
Only a matter of time. Only a matter of time. Called conditioning.
Between 1986 and 89, he stalked many people, but he didn't kill again until 89. He even fixated on one woman to the point where he bugged her house to find out information about her. This is allegedly, of course, because I don't buy that. He didn't bug the house.
Yeah. I don't
know. No. Because how would he, it would be easy nowadays, but back then, he would have to do something that would be recorded into a device that was on the premises through a wire, because the wireless technology didn't exist back then. Yeah. Which means that he would have to go go back there and retrieve tapes. Yeah, there's no way he bugged her house.
Yeah, I don't see that happening. No way.
So another time in 87, Dennis saw a woman in her late 30s, and he watched her to the point of hiding in the bushes, by her house for hours and hours. He had thrown together a kill kit with two guns, tape, flashlight, handcuffs, a plastic bag, cord, rope, a scarf, a knife, a crowbar, a glass cutter, a mask, cotton and plastic gloves, and zip ties.
Damn. Did he rent a U-Haul to get all that crap up there?
Maybe. He said he kept it all in a bag, and so a normal person that he was would think that he was just out on a stroll. So I guess that bag is a small TARDIS. Bigger on the inside. He knocked on the door. There was no answer, so he cut the phone line, which is his trademark. He cut a hole in the window, and he opened the door, and he hid in a closet, and he waited and waited. Nobody came home, so he left. This is Maureen Hedge if she hadn't come home that night. December 31st, 1987, Mary Fager came home from out of town. Her husband's car was gone, so she figured that he or their 16-year-old daughter was out somewhere. And she found her husband, Philip, shot to death in the living room on the floor. She called 911, and when officers arrived, they found something even worse in the basement. Both of their daughters were dead in a hot tub. The 9-year-old Sherry was nude and had been strangled. 16-year-old Kelly Jo had been tied tight and dumped headfirst into the hot tub to drown. Jeez. there was a suspect, and it wasn't Dennis. It was a contractor named Bill Butterworth who had done some work on their house the day of the murders. He had emptied his bank account, stole the Fager's car, then bolted to Florida where police there located him. And then he was sent back to plain old Kansas for trial. He claimed that he had entered the house, saw the bodies, got scared, fled, and couldn't remember anything else that happened that day. Yeah, right.
I can't remember a thing. What happened? I don't know.
A few days later, an envelope containing a drawing of a young girl bound lying next to the tub, along with a poem called "Oh God, He Put Sherry in the Tub." And the author of this poem was impressed with the murders, but he didn't claim credit. He actually said he was impressed with their technique.
Mm.
Investigators figured BTK had read about the murders and decided to stir the pot by sending the letter. You know, two things. One, the drawings didn't reflect the crime scene. And two, there was a BTK logo that was verified to be legit. And this proved that, for one, BTK was local, and two, he was still among them. And later, Dennis did admit to sending the letter just to stir the pot.
Huh.
But if you know anything, but still, I mean, you know, the gunshot, you know, that's not exactly his MO. He's never killed anybody by gunshot. He's shot somebody, but he's never killed anybody by gunshot.
Yeah. Now, he had a logo?
Yeah, it was the capital B with like dots in the middle of them, so he's like making boobs out of the B.
Oh wow.
With a T next to it, and then the bottom part of the T, he had like a angled up and an angled down for the K.
Oh. All right. Typical graphic designer.
Yeah, he ripped that off from something. I can't remember what, but he did rip that off from something. But it was similar to Zodiac, though, because Zodiac always left his, logo behind at all of his things. You know, he loved the Zodiac, even though he didn't know who he was.
Yeah.
Huh. So the whole BTK logo thing was ripping off Zodiac. Yeah, I could go into his explanation of why he did this, but it's very long-winded with lots of references to poetry, threes, and sixes.
Yeah, that would be another episode.
Yeah, it would. Or you'd have a whole mess to read there.
Yeah. Oh, man.
So during his cool down, he hadn't stopped trying to kill. He just never did it. So, but he was going full on bondage on himself, even digging holes as graves and biting himself and photographing himself in these graves.
Awkward.
Yeah. In the summer of 1988, he lost his job at ADT, and he was 43 years old at this point. And Paula became the primary provider in the household, which hit Dennis's ego hard.
Oh, I'm sure.
It made him upset. He got upset. Dennis hit the jackpot when he got a job with the U.S. Census.
Oh, crap.
Sherry was finding out exactly how many people lived in the houses, but he was going into more bondage at this point. Hmm. Many plain old Kansas hotels were desecrated by Dennis and his sexy time.
Oh, man.
Yuck.
Ugh.
He was addicted to it at this point. And he even made his own autoerotic asphyxiation contraption. He's got lots of pictures of himself that I'm thankful that I haven't seen. Although he was still trying to kill. He mentions one project, Project Cap in Topeka, where he broke in, but the victim was a no-show. dare she? How dare she?
How dare? Oh.
I don't think I need a new camera. Do you?
I don't think so.
Yeah, that looks good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just the lights and I just had to move it. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah.
It looks fine. It looks as good as yours, almost. Yours is a little bit better. Yours is a little handles the darker a little bit better than mine does. But
yeah, it's just it's got a lower light tolerancy for it, because in general the studio is fairly dark other than the soft lights that I have up.
Yeah, I got soft lights. I got a set of them.
Yeah,
but. So now we arrive in January of 19th of 1991. The sexual predator instinct had really come back. He was 46 years old, and private bondage parties couldn't satisfy him any longer. Dennis fixated on 62-year-old Dolores Davis, and she lived near a dog kennel, so she was Project Dogside.
Oh, man.
He cased her many times in the weeks leading up to it, even so much as peering into the house to get a look. And at that point, he even scared Dolores' cat.
Meow.
Meow. The perfect cover. The perfect cover presented itself for a second time. A Boy Scout outing. He once again arrived early to get everything set up. He said he had to go into town for something, so he went to his parents' house, and his parents were out of town at the moment. He suited up and put together his hit kit, and then he drove by a Baptist church where the scout team had stored some things for alibi.
Hmm.
Dolores' house was actually on the other side of the church, of this same church's cemetery, which he walked across.
Huh.
So he arrived, and since he was short on time, he just threw a cinder block through the sliding glass door.
Oh, wow.
That's escalating a little bit.
Yeah. Being Dolores
ran
noisy.
Out. Huh?
Being a little noisy. It's like,
just a little.
Yeah.
Dolores ran out thinking somebody had ran into her house with a car. Dennis had used his original story about being a wanted man, and all he wanted was food and water, or food, money, her car, and to tie her up, and then he'd leave her alone. This time he had a piece of a pipe that was 12 inches long and full of fishing weights.
Yikes.
Yeah. Dolores said that she's like, you can't be there. Dennis says, ma'am, I have a club, a gun, and a knife. Take your pick. Dolores said that she was expecting somebody. So although Dennis wanted to spend some time with her, he really didn't have a lot of time. So he handcuffed her in the bedroom. He says she complained the entire time, and I bet that if he were to tell the story in 2024, he would say that she was a total Karen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Even though he's a Karen. Well, we'll find out at the end of this episode how much of a Karen BTK is. he then yanked the phone cord out. You know, that's his trademark. You know?
Hey, Mark.
He then talked a bit, which calmed her down a little bit. Yeah, just the keys and some food. That's all he wanted.
Yeah.
He gathered that stuff. Yeah.
He's like, hey, honey. He's like, hey, honey, be calm. Don't get upset. I'm just here.
Don't get upset.
And I'm just here and got to get my stuff done and get out. Just don't be upset.
Yeah.
All right?
Don't be upset. He then gathered that stuff and he got a glass of water. That's another one of his trademarks, remember? He got a glass of water.
Yeah.
He probably had two glasses of water because he didn't get his water at the previous murder.
Mm-hmm.
The Wegerleys. He then pretended to leave. But Doris had said that she had some news. Oh, once he came back, it's like, surprise, I did it, I'm BTK. So Laura said that she had some new shoes in the car, and he asked if he would bring them in for her, which he actually did.
Oh, nice.
So at that point, Dennis tied Dolores with pantyhose and removed the cuffs. He threw her down on the bed, face down, and climbed up on top of her. Dolores begged for her life, but Dennis strangled her with the pantyhose, and he didn't take any pictures. He just wrapped her up in a blanket and put her in the trunk of her own car. He then drove to a lake and left her body there in the bushes. At that time, he realized his .22 pistol was missing. Now, he always refers to his guns as auto, like his .22 auto.
Yeah.
His .25 auto. Does he realize that those guns are not automatic? They're semi-automatic.
No, he doesn't. He has absolutely no clue. Wow.
But he went back to Dolores' house and he found the gun. He had dropped it when he smashed the sliding glass door.
Was he holding the gun and the brick at the same time? It's like,
yeah. Maybe he had the gun like in his back pocket or something, and it just fell out.
Yeah. Jeez.
So he then threw the keys on top of the roof, but he kept the car keys. He then went back inside, stole a camera, her driver's license, and he stashed them in a box in the woods, which he would come back for later. He then went back to the Baptist church and retrieved his car. And then back to the lake to retrieve Dolores' body. He then loaded her into his car, and he made sure to drive very carefully so not to get pulled over. He wanted to take her into an old barn that was back in the woods, but it was snowing pretty heavily by that time, and it was dark, so he couldn't find it. So instead, he dumped her under a bridge, and then he went back to camp like nothing ever happened.
Ah. Second part of that was pure botulism.
I forgot about that. Botulism. Oh, that was great last episode, the whole botulism thing. Yeah.
Nothing but botchery.
Oh, man. The second night of camp, Dennis complained about a headache again, and he went back and retrieved the items that he had stolen from Dolores. He then drove to a rest stop to change clothes, and when he was in the bathroom, a cop came up and said that he wanted to talk to Dennis. BTK thought he was BT fucked. He had a gun on him, and he told the cop that he was a wanted man and that he would need his money and his police car and his gun, and that he would have to tie him up. No. he said he was a scout leader, and he was on his way there after going into town and for some supplies. And he did have his scout clothes with him. He then went to from the rest stop to where he had left Dolores, and he put a porcelain mask on her and took some pictures of her, and you can see those pictures online. Not that you would want to, but they're there. I'm not sure, but I'm wanting to say something similar happened to Henry Lee Lucas with the police at arrest stop and how he had to talk his way out of it. I think I could be wrong about that. I am wrong. He and Otis Toole murdered somebody at a rest stop. That's what that was. Okay. Yeah, we covered those episodes. Yeah, we covered Henry Lee Lucas, but that was some 40 episodes ago. I don't remember. The next day, they dropped the kids off at the church, and he saw some helicopters searching the area, and he knew exactly what they were looking for. The body was found. Everybody was talking about BTK again after both Dolores and Maureen's murders, and he was nervous for a month or two. Dennis had been unemployed since 1990 after the census had let him go, and he contemplated suicide. And finally, in May of 1991, he landed a full-time job, a compliance officer.
Ah, man. You said finally. When you...
Huh?
Yeah. When you said finally, I was like, oh, man, he killed himself. Ah, please.
Do you look at the page count of these notes?
Yeah, you never know. Hey,
well, we're gonna cover his funeral for 20 pages.
He had a twin brother.
We're not even halfway through this episode yet.
Yeah, his twin brother came out of the woodwork.
Yeah. A BT clone.
like Paul McCartney and William Campbell.
I don't know that.
You heard about that story? Oh man.
I have heard about conspiracy theories that Paul McCartney that exists today is actually a clone. I have heard that.
Yeah. Yeah, that he actually died in a car accident in the 60s, mid-late 60s, and a guy by the name of William Campbell, which looks exactly like him, took his place.
Huh. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on.
Yeah, one of the reasons why he was bummed was because he had tried to get a job as a cop and as a security guard, but he was turned down. You know, it was likely due to his age. You know, if a 47-year-old man isn't going to be able to land a job as a rookie cop.
No.
But compliance officer was low-level law enforcement, and he got a badge.
Ooh,
and this was the perfect job for a prick like Dennis. And he, of course, was a very effective compliance officer. He came up with new animal control laws, of course. Yeah, he liked killing animals anyway, and he would ticket people for junk cars, litter, unmowed grass, etc. And still, he was irritated because he had killed 10 people and gotten away with it. Why wasn't he big news like Jack the Ripper, Zodiac, or the Green River Killer? Why wasn't BTK at the big boy table with the rest of them? Damn it! I want to be at the big boy table.
Right?
I'm a big boy. B it stands for bind, but it also stands for big boy.
Yeah.
I'm big boy Dennis. I deserve to be at the big boy table with the Green River Killer and Zodiac.
He hasn't worked hard enough.
I think that he would literally take this frustration out on everybody. Mm. And he used his job to do it because his job was basically, you know, giving him permission to be a dick to everybody.
Oh, yeah. He's now a certified dick.
Yeah. He would write you a ticket if your grass was just a millimeter over the regular length, the regulated length. He would be out there with a ruler measuring it. If your dog got loose, he would pick it up without warning and euthanize it, and then fine you. There was a young woman in her mid-20s that Dennis had fixated on. He never said if he was planning on, you know, killing her, but he was probably spanking the monkey, thinking about her every night at least. Yeah, he would always act awkward around her, and one day she got a new boyfriend. And Dennis flipped out! Oh my god, no!
He got upset.
Dennis was upset. And then the boyfriend, you know, hold on, I got ahead of myself. Dennis flipped out when the boyfriend started staying over, and then the guy moved in, and Dennis really lost it. He started writing her tickets for anything, you know, even things that he had just made up. He told her that if she kicked the boyfriend out, he would leave her alone. She told him to fuck off.
Mm-hmm.
And he stole her dog and had it euthanized.
Well, yeah.
I'm pretty sure he would have killed her at some point.
Yeah.
Or at least tried to.
Hmm.
Many people filed complaints, and a few even filed lawsuits, but the city was making great money off of Dennis. So in a lawsuit like this, who do you think the court sided with? I'm sure that every HOA in the country would jump at the chance to hire Dennis.
Right. Estoppo of one.
Yeah. I will never live in a neighborhood that has an HOA. I won't.
Yeah, they're awful.
Yeah. So, Dennis never killed again that we know of. That we know of. And he never stopped trolling either. He had a fantasy called Twin Peaks, which is a mother and daughter duo. And this fantasy came after the news came out about David Parker Ray and Cindy Hendy, the toy box killer. He wanted to capture a mother and daughter, the daughter aged 10 to 12 years old, and this fantasy involves his murder barn, or a murder barn, the one that he didn't have. He wanted the girl tied to a bed in one room with an intercom system set up. He wanted to torture the mother in another room and then blare the sounds to the daughter, and then from time to time he would peek in on the daughter and tell her that she was next. He even had a pair in mind, but the girl was older than the one in his fantasy. I mean, that whole thing with the—I don't know if do you know much about David Parker Ray, the toy box killer?
Bits and pieces of it are quite vague.
Well, he had a shipping container set up and decked out as basically a torture dungeon. Ooh. And he had an intercom system in it. He had cameras set up. And he would torment his victims that were tied up and everything in there. He would just talk to them like through the intercom system.
Okay. Speaking of intercom, the second audio clip.
No, don't play that one. Remember, yeah. We listened to it and it sounded like crap.
Oh, yeah, that one.
That one wasn't that good anyway. I wasn't being original. I was copying something that I had done on a previous episode. And it didn't come out very well.
Yeah, it was pretty choppy. I was like, what?
Yeah, I don't know why it sounded good when I did it. Something must have happened when I sent it. It got corrupt, maybe got a little bit corrupted or something when I sent it to you.
Either that or it's how it's uploaded into the server here or into the file or something. I don't know, because it sounds the clip sounds good. The one that you sent me. I don't know. Maybe it must be the buffering or something through the program.
Okay, so it happened when it got uploaded.
It must have
so
been.
You listened to it. Okay.
Yeah.
You want? Well, we can try it.
Yeah. Yeah, we can try it.
Or did you?
Yeah. If it sounds like crap, we could dub it.
Yeah, I can drop it in for the audio.
Yeah.
But we'll try. Okay, this is Officer Dennis, compliance officer.
That sounds a lot cleaner than
yeah, I did.
Tried it the first time.
Yeah, I did. That's cool. Although I think I cut off the last part of it. But I, oh well, you get the point.
Yeah.
Because you heard it cut off there at the last second.
Yep.
Yeah, he started to say something. Yeah. Oh well, it's all right. You get the point. Officer Dennis, compliance officer. So, as time went on, more and more serial killers were being caught. And it was still driving Dennis crazy that the whole new, it was still driving Dennis crazy that the whole nation knew about these serial killers, but BTK was just a regional boogeyman.
Mm.
He started realizing that it was just a matter of time before DNA would be matched to him, even if it was after he dead. Even if it was after he was dead, the reality of the fact that although he could get away with his crimes if he died, eventually everybody would know who BTK was, unlike Zodiac or Jack the Ripper. He started disposing of lots of, but not everything, from the hidey hole.
Hidey hole.
January of 2004, the Wichita Eagle reporter Hearst Laviana published a retrospective article about it being 30 years since the Otero murders. He also mentioned that few people even remembered the BTK cases anymore, and that the local author Robert Beatty was writing a book about the murders. On March 19th, 2004, Laviana received a letter from Bill Thomas Kilman. Clever, huh?
Yeah.
It had been mailed March 17th, which was the anniversary of Shirley Vian's murder. In the letter, there were three photos. Vicky Wegerly tied up in various poses. There was also a photocopy of Vicky's driver's license. BTK's logo was at the top of the photocopy page. The return address was in an abandoned building, and there were no police photos of the Wegerly crime scene. And there was nobody named Bill Thomas Kilman anywhere. Mm. The Wichita Eagle ran a story about BTK claiming credit for an 8th murder. Wegerly. Remember, the last time he boasted about it, he claimed there were 7 in the ground.
Yeah.
So this time, national news outlets were interested in the story, because 24-hour news cycle now.
Mm-hmm.
The FBI had run the DNA from Vicky's fingernails, and it turned up nothing other than the fact that it was an unknown male.
Wow, DNA sucked back then.
Yeah. Dennis was 59 at this point, and he was on cloud 9. He was back, baby! He was finally relevant, and he was at the big kids table, or the big table kids.
According to Dennis, yes.
Big BTK, big table kids. On May 24th, Kate. In 2004, Cake TV got an envelope from Thomas B. Kingman that had a word puzzle. It was just a word search that Dennis had made, trying to be like Zodiac. And it literally is just a word search. You'll have Otero in a line going across or down or diagonally, or you'll have Wegerly, or you'll have Hangman or Poetic or whatever. It also had numbers in it, and if you dig into it a little bit, there would be the numbers would be like the numbers of the addresses of the street addresses of the victims.
Oh wow.
A little bit of thought went into it, but nothing like what Zodiac did.
He was quite the craftsman. His brain cells were, he had some synaptic reflexes going and stuff, but it's probably what kept him busy for all those years.
I mean, anybody can make a word search.
Yeah.
But It also had photocopies of two handmade ID cards that he had made and a special officer badge. Officer Dennis's badge, maybe. He is special after all. He's special. Yeah, the ID cards and the badge didn't have anything to do with anything. It was just Dennis being Dennis. But there was a list of chapters from Dennis's idea for a book. Take it away, Paul.
So, the BTK story. 1, a serial killer is born. 2, dawn. Not the dish soap, but the day. The time of day.
Oh, no, it might have been the dish soap.
Or a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gotta use it for cleanup. 3, yeah. Fetish. 4, fantasy world. 5, the search begins. 6, BTK's haunts. 7, PJs or PJS projects.
Yeah.
8, Mo ID reuse.
Ruse.
Okay. Ruse.
It was like, that was like a, MO, like modus operandi, MO ID ruse, like fake IDs.
Okay. Number 9, hits.
Number nine.
Hits, yeah.
Well, you were talking about Paul McCartney. That's reminded me of it.
Number 10, treasured memories. 11, final curtain call. 12, dusk.
Ooh.
And number 13, will there be more?
I got to notice that the final chapter of that 13 has, you know, a 3 in it.
Oh, yeah.
Although 13 does not divide into, if 13 on, you know, divides into 3, but there's a remainder.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And the remainder may, I don't know, when was it? Yeah, maybe a Friday. Could have been Friday the 13th.
Yeah, but if you 13 divided by 3 is 4 with a remainder of 1.
Yeah. I cannot think like Dennis.
Either. I hope he listens to this podcast, and I hope he's like, you're right. 13 divided by 3 is 4 with a remainder of 1.
Right. Don't make me upset. I like your show.
Don't make me upset. Although, 13 minus 1 is 12, and 12 has a 1 and a 2, and 1 plus 2 is 3.
And that's what that number 1 stands for, is there is one more.
I think I just cracked the code.
Wow.
I hope I did. I hope Dennis hears it. He's like, son of a bitch, that stupid podcaster figured it out. I might as well hang myself. Also, a police badge was thrown into the mail slot at the library. Dennis had bought this at a pawn shop, and he had it when he went to Shirley Vian's place when he was pretending to be a detective. You know, looking for his own wife and kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. And all of this activity stopped the release of Beatty's book, obviously. I can see why. It's like, holy crap, there's more to this book. Yeah. But come on, Beatty, man. The sequel. The sequel, man. You released what you have, and then immediately start following the story, and then write a sequel.
Exactly. Got to keep the franchise going.
Yeah. You might, yeah. Otherwise, you have to reboot it 2 years later.
Yeah. Yeah.
June 13, 2004, a man was on his way to work when he discovered a brown envelope taped to a stop sign. It was labeled BTK Fieldgram. Mm. It had the table of contents for his book once again, as well as a drawing of a nude woman bound and hanging from a pole. It was captioned, "The sexual thrill is my bill."
Mm.
It also had a narrative of from a fictitious book called Death on a Cold January Morning. It was a detailed account of the planning of the Otero murders, as well as sexual fantasies about torturing females.
Eef.
His primary target in the Otero murders was Julie. Yeah, he was thinking that she was alone in the house. He was planning on kidnapping her and driving her to a secluded spot in the country, raping, strangling, and then dumping her. His name for himself in that narrative was Rex. So put a knife in that. He then goes into how his plan shifted, and he goes into detail about Josie, which I'm not going to repeat. He also goes into more symbolism dribble about why he left it where he did. And I almost left this part out, but I figured I'd torture my good buddy Paul with it. So take it away, Paul.
He said he had left the package at first. Yeah, package first at, was it? Yeah. He said he left the package at first and Kansas. Okay, that's a street.
First Street, no, Kansas Street.
There we go. Yeah. Cool. I get it. I'm getting it. I was like, man, this ain't poetry again. God dang it. The Oteros were the first murders that of that kind in Kansas. First in Kansas. It was a stop sign telling people to stop and look. The pole was a phallic symbol that he was a man. He picked a 3-tape date, the 12th, to leave it. Although it was found on the 13th, it was wrapped with duct tape, which symbolizes bondage.
He put way too much thought into that.
Yeah.
His next communication. Like somebody's going to walk up, "Oh, what's this? A package on a stop sign. That means stop. Hmm. It's at first in Kansas. It's from BTK. That was the first in Kansas." Like somebody would actually figure all that out.
Oh, man.
And I don't think that this is something that he came up with after the fact. I think that that was his thought process when he did it. I really do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because he's such a freaking chucklehead that, you know, it's just like he's just got to rationalize anything and everything that he does. You know, it's just like, yeah, he wants people to think that he's a hell of a lot more intelligent than he is.
Yeah.
I mean, was he an idiot? Yes. But he wasn't like mentally impaired or anything like that. He may have even had a little bit of above average intelligence, a little bit, but still just the shit that he did was stupid.
Yeah. Maybe too much of the emotion is raging within him while it's actually being done, that it just, he loses his mind and forgets simple.
Yeah. Could be. His next communication had a warning. He had chosen a new victim and was considering a date for the next hit. And now seems as good of a time as any to introduce the detective that had been on the forefront of the investigation the entire time, Ken Landwehr. And at this point, since he knew that BTK was Vicky Wegerle's killer, thanks to the photos of her, he authorized all of the DNA from the unsolved murders to be DNA tested. This linked the Oteros, Nancy Fox, the Oteros and Nancy Fox to BTK, as well as to Wegerle, because they all matched up. In press conferences, he began addressing BTK directly.
Oh.
Remember that FBI profile in part two? You know, keep the killer talking. Well, that's what he was doing. Landwehr is a rock star, man. Getting cold in here. But Dennis would later say that he trusted Landwehr, but he always somehow felt like he was one step ahead of Landwehr. And that was true until now.
Bum, bum, bum.
That's what that BBB was.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, I was telling myself to play. I just need to type out bump, bump, bump.
Oh. Instead of playing it.
Better late than never.
We've got our own encrypted script.
Yeah. Encrypted so well, it confuses us. July 17th, 2004. A library employee emptied a return box at the library, and there was a plastic bag with papers in it. And the employee saw the BTK logo and called the police. I ain't touching that. I ain't touching that. The papers had a 2-page story called Jakey, and it also had a picture of an adult man in bondage. Jake Allen was a 19-year-old high school student. He was a valedictorian. He was a good and smart kid. And on July 4th, 2004, he turned down a date with a girl in class. And then 8 hours later, he was found dead strapped to a railroad track 35 miles south of Wichita.
Whoa.
His clothes were found nearby. And it was thought that he had either gotten himself mixed up in something bad, or he had just killed himself. Now, BTK claimed Jake's death as his, saying that that he had bondage and homosexual fantasies. Jake did. He said that he had met Jake online and indulged him, and then when they met up in person, he killed him. And investigators called bullshit on this, and so do I. You ain't gay, BTK. BTK may have been a lot of things, but gay was not one of them. but also, there were no messages or emails on Jake's computer talking to anybody about gay fantasies.
Yeah.
So Dennis did stalk several other high school girls, but he never did anything. He planned on a grand finale where he would torture a girl much worse than anything prior, as well as rape her in every way possible. He had a contraption in mind, which was most likely ripped off from David Parker Ray, the toy box killer. He claims to have been ready to pounce, but there was too much activity in the area when he was going to do it. Late in the day, October 22nd, 2004, a UPS driver was picking up packages from a drop box. He found an envelope that said BTK Field Grams. It had the table of contents of his book idea with more three dribble and all sorts of triangulations, the Holy Trinity, man, woman, sex, which rhymes with fox. Hit, thrill, kill. BTK, victim, police, and other crap like that. Yeah, BTK works in threes, whatever that means. He's killed 10. That's three threes with a remainder of one, so it doesn't work. Sorry, Dennis. It also included chapter 2 of his book, Dawn. That thing about the, you know, the murder on a cold January morning was part one. So he was actually writing his book, and, you know, I left it out. I mean, you can find it online. You can also find it in the book that I've used, Confessions of a Serial Killer, The Untold Stories of Dennis Rader, the BTK Killer, by Catherine Ramsland. I can't believe I remembered that without having the book right in front of me. But because this shit with these true crime books, man, their titles are like an entire page long.
Yeah.
But so he actually was, I mean, and it wasn't, I mean, an editor could have made it a really compelling read, you know? So he had the, you know, like I said, he probably wasn't a total idiot. I mean, he had a good ideas for a structure of the book.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, like I said, he would have needed an editor. But Dawn is his childhood, and he talks about how Mama shaved him for jerking the gherkin, and how he fought back. She whipped him, and he actually got aroused by it. One thing. Now, I actually did listen. You know, after I finished these notes, I actually did listen to the original, you know, part one and part two when we covered that initially, and oh my god, it was so painful to listen to. But in there, in there, I did say something like, "It's the exact opposite of disturbed and down with the sickness."
Oh,
instead of David Dramian saying, "Oh, mommy, please don't hurt me again," Dennis is probably like, "Oh, mommy, please hit me again." Hey, at least something good came out of those two crappy ass episodes,
right?
I had totally forgotten about that, and then I listened to it. I'm like, "Oh, okay, that's funny."
Oh, the nuances.
I couldn't leave that out. Yeah, of this one. That was good. So by now, this now great. Now people are going to be listening to those two episodes just to hear what I had initially said. By now, December 2004, the media and the police were paying less and less attention to Dennis the Menace. He would call Cake TV and the police, and you know, nobody was just taking him serious anymore. He called in a bomb threat at a convenience store. There was no bomb. There was a BTK package waiting there, but he had hidden it too well, and it wasn't found until 2 days later.
Wow.
The box contained a knockoff Barbie doll with its hands tied behind its back. I get the knockoff part because Barbie dolls are expensive.
Oh, yeah.
You can just go to Dollar General and pick up, you know, like pay $2 for one. You know, legs are going to pop out if you move it, but but its hands were tied behind its back, and there were two pages in it called Project Fox or PJ Foxtail. This contained the details of Nancy Fox's murder, including how much he got off on her murder. Sparky big time. That's what he called his geyser of Dennis juice that he left all over Nancy in the bed.
Oh, wow. Sparky big time.
Yeah. It also contained Nancy's actual driver's license, not a photocopy of it. Around the same time, America's Most Wanted had run a piece on BTK, and Dennis had hit the big time, and he probably Sparky big timed all over his TV. Be interesting to see that episode of America's Most Wanted because, and I'm sure it's on YouTube somewhere. If it's not on YouTube, I'm sure it's on Tubi or something. But
probably searchable on YouTube, you know.
But in the book, it said that episode of America's Most Wanted got a couple things wrong, and I'd be interested to see what those were.
Mm.
So January 25th, Cake TV got a postcard from BTK. It had the name S. Killett at 803 North Edgemore Avenue. Any idea? Remember what that address was?
Oh. Ooh.
That was the Otero's address.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the Otero's. Okay.
It said that there was a box of post-toasties cereal box that had been left between 69th and 77th on North Seneca, or 69th and 77th North on Seneca Street. He wanted to know if anybody had found it. So police found the box, and it had another Barbie knockoff, and it was tied up with a noose around its neck, which was attached to a small piece of PVC pipe, obviously referencing Josie Otero. There were more There were more entries into his so-called BTK book, as well as some jewelry. And the card also mentioned a Special K cereal box at a Home Depot.
That should be easy to find.
Well, maybe. There was luck involved with this one.
Yeah.
An employee said that he had found a Special K box in the back of his truck when he got home a couple days prior, and he threw it away thinking nothing of it. Luckily, the trash hadn't come yet, and they were able to retrieve the box. I've seen some reports that said that the garbage truck was literally coming down the street when they got to it. I don't know if that's true or not, or if it was just sensationalism to spice up the story. But regardless of whether that's true or not, it's an interesting tidbit. Police went over the security camera footage from the Home Depot, and they saw a dark SUV pull up to the employee's pickup truck, and a man get out, throw something into the back of the truck, and then drive off. It was too blurry to get a positive ID, but they were able to determine that the SUV was a black Jeep Grand Cherokee. The box contained a blue necklace, some writing on pages, more BTK dribble. This one was called Lair, and it contained a diagram of a three-story house with a kill room, a bondage room. It even had an elevator.
Whoa.
Now, the Lair is basically an H.H. Holmes murder castle ripoff. There's a very long description of it. So rather than go over it here, I'm just going to put the pictures on the social media pages, which will be, all of which will be linked in the episode notes. If you're not on our social media, if you're not, you should be.
Yes. That's where you put all the fun stuff, all the homework.
And I'm serious. If more people interact, I'll be more active on the social media. I haven't been as active as I normally am. Which isn't as much as some, but the reason I haven't been lately is because we've been like stockpiling these episodes, getting ready for your deployment, and I just haven't had time.
Yeah. But yeah.
So this is where it gets good. Dennis in this box asks if he can communicate safely by floppy disk. And he tells the police to be honest, and if it was safe, they should put an ad in the classified section of the newspaper that says, Rex, it will be okay. Once he saw that, he'd know it was safe to proceed, and he'd send a test floppy.
They still call them floppies back in 04?
Yeah, there were the smaller ones. They're still called floppy disk, though.
As time goes by,
it's like 1.3 megabytes of data of space on those things.
Yeah. Boy, does time slip away.
So Dennis trusted the police. He thought he had some kind of kinship with them. So they ran and ad that said, sorry, Rex, we can trace the origin of floppy disks. You'll have to come up with something else. No, they didn't do that. They ran the ad just as Dennis had worded it and waited. Oh, and why do you think he chose the name Rex? Take a guess.
Rex?
It was because in chapter one of that thing, he called himself Rex.
Oh.
Yeah, that that book or whatever it was that he had written, was writing.
Yeah, yeah.
He called him, he referred to himself as Rex. So like the police are gonna, you know, like I said, nah, we could trace it. Sorry. Yeah. We're just being honest with you there, BTK. So, okay, for the symbolism, now for the symbolism of the cereal boxes, the post Toasties box had the T circled. The special K box had the K circled. There were cereal boxes for serial killers. And he said there would have been a Raisin Bran box that that contained a bomb as well as the Shirley Vian Barbie knockoff doll.
Mm.
February 3rd, 2005, Cake TV got a postcard. He thanked the news company for their effort, and he thanked the police for their quick response. He said that the floppy would be there soon. He also said that the package would contain a 3x5 index card along with the floppy, explaining how to communicate with him. I think the police know how to use a floppy there, Dennis.
I would,
you know?
I would hope they would.
I would hope so.
Yeah.
So, February 16th, 2005, the package came to a different news station. It contained, as BTK promised, a 3x5 index card along with a purple floppy, explaining how to communicate with him. And like I said, I think they know how to use a floppy, Dennis. Mm-hmm. It also has some trinkets that belong to Nancy Fox, the TV station that he sent this one to.
Mm.
Take a guess.
It was a Fox affiliate station. Oh, the symbolism.
So, yeah. I think Cake TV was an ABC affiliate. But he had never sent anything to the Fox affiliate before, but because it had Nancy Fox stuff in it, hey, symbolism. I'm BTK. I'm smart. I'm symbolism. I'm the symbolic poetic strangler. But Dennis was excited because he was high tech now. He's using floppy disks and computers and stuff. And he had chosen a purple floppy because purple represents royalty. And, you know, he is serial killer royalty at this point. I mean, he's at the big table kids now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Oh, man.
I'm having fun with this. I mean. So Ken Landwehr and his people got to work on the floppy. It had come from Christ Lutheran, which was the church that Dennis went to, from the president's office, from a man named Dennis. Now, this is some high tech police work here that they did. They did a simple Google search of Christ Lutheran and revealed that a man named Dennis Rader had recently been elected to president of the church.
Wow.
That's some high tech shit right there.
High tech.
They got his address and they even found the black Jeep Grand Cherokee in the driveway. They had him. They had the son of a. They had some DNA subpoenaed from Dennis's daughter, Carrie, from like medical visits.
Yeah.
It matched on a familial level to the DNA found at the Oteros, Nancy Fox, and the fingernails of Vicky Wegerle. You're going ooh. Down, Dennis.
Ooh, ooh, ooh.
You're gonna be just like Son of Sam, just like the Toy Box Killer, just like the Hillside Strangler. Now you are going to have that thing in common with him, you piece of shit.
Right?
You're going to be in prison too. So So Landwehr ordered constant surveillance on Dennis. Search warrants were issued. They also studied his movements. And finally, on February 25th, Landwehr led a SWAT team to the church. At 12:15, Dennis pulled out of the church parking lot, and they pulled him over. The SWAT team swatted him. They threw him on the ground. And they cuffed him. And when he was put into the police car, Dennis, the unoriginal to the end, he even admits to doing what Son of Sam did. He looked at Landwehr. He looked Landwehr in the eye and said, "Hello, Mr. Landwehr." So even when he got captured, he's ripped somebody else off.
Oh, man.
The police questioned him and told him that the DNA evidence would nail Dennis to the wall. And after 3 hours of interrogation, Dennis finally broke. Landwehr then asked him, "Who are you, Mr. Raider?" Dennis paused and he says, "I'm BTK." I'd like to think that that was the first time that he had actually said BTK. You know? But yeah. He probably had himself in the freaking, you know, he's probably in the mirror going, "I'm BTK." At home or in his hotel or whatever. "I'm BTK.
Yeah, yeah.
I am BTK."
Trying to get it right.
Because I seriously doubt, you know, like a lot of the other, like the Hillside Stranglers. I seriously doubt that Bueno and Bianchi were sitting there in the mirror going, "I am a Hillside Strangler." You know, no. But you know damn well, BG, you know damn well Dennis dead.
Yep. Yeah, I'm sure he was practicing it a long time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. During the interrogation, Landwehr put the floppy disk on the table, and after he admitted to being BTK, Dennis asked, "You know, why did you lie to me?" Yeah, about the, he's like, I thought we were bros. You lied to me about the floppy. Like, why the fuck do you think we lied to you, you fucking idiot?
Oh, man.
Like.
don't get it. He doesn't get it.
No. He said that maybe, you know, he says that maybe if he had used his personal computer, you know, maybe it wouldn't have been. Yeah, he's just speculating that it wouldn't have been. But it still would have had, even if it didn't have the registration from the church or whatever, even if it didn't have like that as Dennis Raider or whatever, it would still have the IP address that it came from.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So they still would have been able to get him. It would have just taken probably an hour longer.
Mm-hmm.
Like literally an hour longer.
Yeah. Yeah, but the technology, I mean, as technology gets better, so does the study of the technology. I mean, it, you have officers specifically
push one button and they got the IP address.
Yeah.
But that's why I was saying, like, back then in 2005, it might have taken an hour longer, you know?
Yeah.
But still.
Yeah.
But we also found another BTK haiku spelled HYKOO that he wrote in BTK 363 Factor X format. Roll it!
Floppy disk. Bad cop lied to Dennis. Son of bitch.
Oh, geez.
Dennis had done this without a lawyer present. So he was officially booked, and his mugshot looks strangely similar to my driver's license picture. he then confessed to everything. You know, 30 hours straight. It's just nonstop. He just would not shut up.
Whoa.
You know, all, All of the evidence from the hidey hole was recovered, and Paula divorced him immediately. Dennis was evaluated and found fit to stand trial. He knew right from wrong. June 27th, the trial began. Court TV covered it too. The victim's families were there. And he pleaded guilty to all 10 murder counts. And during the proceedings, Dennis was able to tell everybody about Factor X. He thought he was giving a TED talk until he mentioned trolling. And then the judge asked, what do you mean? And Dennis starts going into a long explanation of the stages of trolling, and the judge stopped him. The judge was like, no, Mr. Raider, I thought you said patrolling, like you were a police officer. Are you a... And Dennis is like, no, I was trolling. although he could have said, well, I am Officer Dennis, compliance officer. Oh, man. He got all philosophical. He starts describing Factor X, his sexual fantasies, and talking about his demons. And he was still having fun with it because he finally got his day in the sun. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was literally putting on a show.
Yeah.
In the end, he was sentenced to life without parole, with no parole for the possibility of 175 years.
I don't know.
He's at the El Dorado Correctional Facility in Colorado in solitary. And after we did our first series on him, as horrible as those two episodes were, a listener contacted me saying that she knew somebody who worked there at that facility. They would have inmates coming out and mopping the floors and things like that. And Dennis would complain all the time. They're like, they're bothering me. Yeah. He's basically a Karen.
Yeah.
He's trying to work his just flex his muscle and all that stuff because he is after all BTK member of the serial killer Big Table Kids.
Mm-hmm.
Table Kids. that might be the name of this episode.
Big Table Kids.
Finally, it got to the point to where somebody would get on the loudspeaker and just say, all right, whoever's bothering BTK, please knock it off. He's whining again. I don't know if this is true or not, but it is what I was told, and I freaking hope it was true. So Dennis talked about Factor X. It was what drove all serial killers to do what they want to do. It controls him. So we're going to take a look at it. X comes from sex. It's part of sex, which rhymes with fox, apparently. He said that sex is the driving factor of inhuman existence. Well, duh, without it, there are no more humans. And yeah. Not to mention the fact that it's fun and it feels great. He says, most people have closet desires, meaning that they might have sex toys or go to strip clubs or visit sex workers. Spouses cheat to get better sex. Some people are into S&M. Some people into homosexuality. All people are influenced by Factor X. I swear this sounds like a Dr. Seuss book.
Right? Oh, maybe that's what he's working on in prison there. Using his graphics.
Yeah, so S, X comes from sex. S stands for S&M. This allows Dennis to enjoy control by injecting pain. It also leads to rape, which Dennis never did other than mental rape. It also includes porn, but no kiddie porn. Dennis wants you to know that he wasn't into that, even though he admits to groping Josie Otero and jizzing on her. He may or may not have been into that, but what about other serial killers that are, I mean, are they not under the control of Factor X too? I mean, so Dennis wants you to think that Factor X doesn't allow people to harm kids.
Yeah.
But in his initial communication way back in the 70s, he said that that factor X was what drives all serial killers.
Yeah.
But there are some killers that mess with kids, like that do hideous things to kids. Are they, so he's contradicted himself. Are they under the control of factor X or are they not? Hmm. Now he's lazy too, because E stands for event, the affair, the episode, sex. Sex is normal. It drives people to create offspring. It also involves punishment, even corporal punishment by parents such as spanking. Could that be why he loved his mom spanking him so much?
Yeah, possibly.
You better spank me. Nothing like a good kid's party. God, what song was that? Better spank me. Nothing like a little hanky-panky. I don't know. Is it No Doubt? I don't know. Dennis says that he was raised Christian, married Christian, never used profanity or drugs, rarely drank, raised kids Christians, respected the law, but he turned out dark. So if everybody is influenced by factor X, he is saying that factor X has a light side and a dark side. Hmm. Is factor X the force? Factor X is the Schwartz and Dennis got the downside. Because there's an upside to every Schwartz and Dennis got the downside. Got it.
He got the downside. The dark. Yep.
Yep. The downside. Yeah.
The downside.
One thing that I find strange is that Dennis is so obsessed with threes, yet everything that he's saying about factor X says that there are two sides to it. But trying to make sense of anything that Dennis Rader says is like trying to glue something with butter.
Yeah. Yeah.
But as for what X stands for, that is a mystery of why some people turn out good and some people turn out bad. Mm. So, like I said a minute ago, he's lazy. He can't even finish his own analogy.
Yeah, yeah.
But there you have it. That's factor X. Wow. I get it.
I get it. Yeah. It's an interesting theory.
I don't get it.
I mean, he's trying to hypothesize something of his own delusion and.
Yeah.
You know,
but I really wish somebody had interviewed another serial killer and told them about how BTK said that factor X drives all serial killers,
mm-hmm.
and asked them what they thought about it.
Yeah. I wonder if I wonder if they've had a criminal psychologist look over this factor X thing and see if they could put some sort of derangement syndrome to it.
I'm sure it's been done. Maybe a psychiatrist took one look at it, just like,
that's this shit. Bullshit.
Yeah. this is just a delusional man child trying to make him, trying to flex on people.
Yeah.
But at least there was something alive telling David Berkowitz what to do, even if it was just a little puppy dog.
Yeah.
David Berkowitz. Yeah, we haven't covered him yet.
No.
Nope. There's a lot of the heavy hitters that we haven't covered yet. We haven't covered Bundy. We haven't covered Dahmer. Dahmer, what we said, Dahmer. Jeffrey Dahmer will be episode 500. This is episode 95. Yeah. So, there's a lot of the heavy hitters that we haven't covered. I mean, we have covered a handful of them, but
yeah,
not very many. Charlie Otero had a very hard time after the murder of his family. He had run-ins with the law and he did drugs, but he got it turned around. He renounced God on the day that he found his family dead, but like I said, he's turned it all around. He got off drugs. He's a motivational speaker. He graduated from Dale Carnegie School for Motivational Speaking. He speaks at churches and at prisons. He also found God again, and he credits God for helping him pull his life back together.
Amen.
He also has a, yeah, he also has a son named Joseph after his father and his brother. And I think I'm going to try to get him on for an interview at some point. I think that would be interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
What would really be interesting would be, you know, if I could get Charlie Otero and Jody Plache on at the same time to talk about, you know, surviving and coming back from something like that and everything. I think that would be interesting as shit. And just letting you know, I've already contacted Jody about this and he's on board.
Oh, cool.
He's just like,
cool.
He's like, get Charlie. He's like, get Charlie. Let's do it.
Right on.
I love Jody. Man. I love Jody. I could seriously be really good friends with that guy in real, you know, in real life.
And the thing is, he's too, cool is like maybe putting together a group of, you know, being motivational speakers and having to go through stuff like this, you know, being that shoulder to lean on if it were to happen to anybody else out there. Because when this happens to people, they don't know what to do. They hide or they kill themselves. But they don't know who to go to for therapy, somebody to talk to him when something like this happens to a family or an individual.
And Jody's a motivational speaker as well. That's why I think it would be awesome. I think it would be very interesting to pair those two up and let them, and just sit back and listen to them talk.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, cause I mean, I can inject myself into this a little bit because of the fact that I'm a cult survivor, but I'm just going to sit back and listen to them talk. I maybe ask a question here and there. Yeah. I just want to hear the two of them talk. I think that would be very interesting.
Absolutely.
So, so now, you know, in part one, we said that we would talk about a couple murders that he suspected in, you know, that he probably actually did do. So we're going to get to them now. He's considered the prime suspect in a murder in Missouri and one in Oklahoma. 16-year-old Cynthia Dawn Kenny was last seen in Osage, Oklahoma, June 23rd, 1976, at a laundromat. She was seen getting into a beige Plymouth Belvedere, a beige Plymouth Belvedere. And Dennis was involved with the Boy Scouts, and he was in the area at that time. You know, and also the term bad wash day turned up in his writings. And also, there was a bank across the street from the laundromat that was having an ADT security system installed on the day that she disappeared. Mm-hmm. Now, Osage, Oklahoma was in Dennis's service area. Also, Dennis fantasized about kidnapping a girl from a laundromat. So there are four things that point to Dennis, you know, but Dennis vehemently denies this murder, mainly because he would be tried for it. You know, Oklahoma would be like, okay, we want to try his ass for it. And if Oklahoma charged him with murder and he was found guilty, Oklahoma has the death penalty.
Yep.
Kansas does not. So the other one is 22-year-old. Actually, you know what? I think Cynthia Dawn Kenny, I think she's been the subject of some unsolved podcast episodes because that name rang a bell with me when I, you know, when I was putting this together. So I think she may have been the subject of some unsolved, you know, true crime podcast. But I don't know. I mean, granted, all of this is circumstantial evidence, but there's four different things all having to do with BTK, all having to do with him being there at that put him there like at that time. I think he did it. What do you think?
Yeah.
22-year-old Shauna Beth Garber was found murdered in McDonald County, Missouri, December 2nd, 1990. She had been raped, strangled, and hogtied with six different types of cords. And she went missing November 3rd and was identified in 2021. Dennis is suspected due to photographic evidence in one of the journals that tied him to the scene. So he had taken pictures of the crime scene, and it didn't say whether or not he had pictures of her.
Yeah.
But he had pictures of the area where she was found. So I'm not as sure about this one as I am about Cynthia Kinney, but I'd say that that's probably, I'd say you could probably chalk that one up to him as well.
Yeah.
But, and there's probably even more than that. Those two are just the two most common ones that come up when, you know, when talking about like other murders that BTK committed that he didn't, you know, that he hasn't been charged with.
Yeah. There could have been ones that he truly felt that he botched and didn't want to admit to him.
Yeah. So now we're done. I have righted the travesty that was the early two-part series on BTK.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, those two episodes have bothered me for a very long time, and I've finally done it. I've finally done it right. And now I'm done with BTK forever. And I just want to say to BTK right now, BTK Dennis, Officer Dennis, compliance, comply with this. Bite me.
Yeah. So how old is he now?
Yeah, he's
79. Yeah, 79.
Yeah, he's almost 80. Yeah,
depending on the month, he's 80. Just say 80. A rounded number. Keep the threes out of it.
No three for you, Dennis. So. Yeah, I have conquered my white whale.
Oh yeah.
Ugh. So
heck yeah.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Hope you liked this this three-part on BTK. I enjoyed doing it. I enjoyed getting through it without being prepared both mentally and, you know, I guess you could say professionally to cover a large case like this one.
Yeah. It's a large case. Big case. Definitely.
And the funny thing about it is this episode, you know, this series has about 12 more pages than the one on Panzram. Mm. But it's gonna be about an hour shorter than the Panzram episode.
Yeah.
So that may be something, you know, if our episodes wind up starting to be shorter because of how fast we get through it or whatever than it has been, I'm okay with that. At first I was just like, no, but you know, still this episode's still a long one, but still it's just like, I'm not going to flip out about it anymore. Cause I know we've talked in, you know, like off camera about like, well, the episodes aren't as long. So if there's an episode that normally would have been like 2 hours previously that are now like an hour and 25 minutes, I don't care. It's fine.
It's a case by case basis.
Yeah. But it also shows improvement. So I'm all about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
So anyway, thanks a lot for listening. Appreciate the hell out of it. Check out our socials. They'll all be linked in the show notes of this and every episode. At the moment, I've taken down the Patreon page, and I'll try to get that kicked up again once you get back from your deployment. We only had one subscriber. I haven't had time to put together more content, and I would hate to have her continue to pay every month if I'm not putting out material. So, but we're gonna. I've let her know about that, and I'm also going, you know, we'll get it back together at some point, and I also want to kind of figure out a direction for it.
Mm.
So if you have any suggestions, Paul or listeners, hey, what direction should we go? I don't want it to be true crime. I want it to be something you know, something that wouldn't fit on this. And that's been always been the case. But I mean, there's some pretty weird stuff on the Patreon. Yeah. Entertaining stuff too. Like, but anyway, but yeah, follow, you know, like, subscribe and share and all that stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, share, subscribe, follow,
comment,
comment, definitely. And right. Wherever you listen. Yeah. Wherever you listen to your podcasts. Oh yeah.
If you like us, tell a friend. If you hate us, tell an enemy.
Yeah.
And until next time, in our next episode, we've got a doozy for you and I'm going to make you wait for it.
Oh yeah.
So I think I'm hungry. I think I want a sub, but anyway, until next time, later.
Later on. Bye.
You see.